This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina will soon be installing Shelby Stevenson as the new Poet Laureate of the state of North Carolina. Born and raised near Benson, North Carolina, and his work is informed by a childhood filled with hunting, fishing, picking tobacco, and listening to stories told by his father and other family members. He's a graduate of the University of North Carolina, taught for several years at UNC Pembroke, and is going to be installed as the state's new Poet Laureate Monday, February 2nd. That happens at 5:30, but luckily Shelby Stevenson is here right now to talk with us. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Good to be here. You just said everything, so I don't have to say much.
Thanks for listening, folks. That's our show, produced by Laura. Tell us about this, though. You do have a program. I mean, the Poet Laureate generally develops a program, a way to promote poetry across the state. What are you going to do?
Well, in my letter of interest, I mentioned three things, okay? One, going into... Well, I've been doing that, really. Assisted living places. My wife is at Carolina House in Smithfield, and I hear some marvelous things. I say, "Hi, Rose," and she says, "Hi," and so on. She'll say, yeah. And the second thing, I grew up on a small farm at the trail end of a plantation. I look out across the road, and my great-great-grandfather, who died in 1886, his slaves are buried there. And the land has changed all around, and farming, houses are being farmed instead of crops. And we're in the tobacco district. We know some of the story there. So, but I was in Future Farmers of America. I probably knew at least half of the FFA creed.
Did they not have a Future Poets of America in your county?
Do you know, there was something, I got to be careful, always not funny about the arts, but about poetry. I grew up thinking, okay, what, 14, 15, 16, ended up going to college, I got to get a job. So I ended up as an English major, went to law school. The law and I failed each other. Spring of 63, threw a blind date, got a job with AT&T out of White Plains, New York, and that's how I learned New York State and Pennsylvania and all up the Northeast and saw the birches that Robert Frost wrote about. And the other thing, I didn't grow up with libraries, Frank, okay? There was a room in the school I went to. It was called the library room. And so anyway, archives. I did research for a book, Archives in Raleigh, and at the Heritage Center in Smithfield. Went to, and someone looked at me and said, "Hey, you can see a copy of the bill of sale for July the Slave Girl if you go to the courthouse."
Well, tell us about that book. You need to
okay.
give us the backstory.
I thought, okay, this came out in 2008. Belle Day won the Belle Day Prize. Alan Grossman was the judge. I don't have a publisher. I send these manuscripts out. I trip over them at home.
You did talk about you came from, your family owned slaves, and you decided to write about that, and one in particular, a slave enslaved woman named July.
She, great-great-grandpap George sold her in 1851 for $413.25. She was 10 years old. And I got a book out of it after saying to myself, well, I'm not the right color. The fiction writers, usually Styron and others, Penn Warren and so on, do this. And the poets, it's not off limits, but I have, I guess, a bias against didacticism or whatever prose is. So, but I did put it in. I did get a book, and what I did was I actually cited the references in Family Matters, Homage to July the Slave Girl. I actually.
What impact did that have on you?
Pardon
looking
me?
When you saw that bill of sale, And you actually looked at the copy of it emotionally, because that is the stuff of poets, right? To try to convey to the rest of us deep sort of ineffable feeling that you get.
Oh, yeah. When I was in the archives in Raleigh, I parked and I've got it on what, microfilm? And my hands were shaking. I was trying to – I'm a technical no-no. So he helped me get it on whatever, the sprocket. And he said, you know, you can see this at the courthouse. Wow. And then I went to the Heritage Center in Smithfield. I wish every small town had one, and for family history.
Yeah.
You must know your family history or some of it. So I was growing old looking at these books, and then I said, well, I got to make it up. But Alan Grossman was seeing these snippets and things, and I didn't plan this, but like collages of things that were documented, and then I would riff, because the only evidence I had, there are no records,
right.
You understand? What is the word I'm looking for? Usually from... the points of view of others,
right?
But
right.
The slaves left no records.
There's no record, and so you're having to sort of, in some ways, embody that. And you did that, as you say, with that sort of trepidation that anyone would have, daring to embody and give voice to someone
and
from another culture.
I did find the Sanders public container composition book. I saw Frank names. Of slaves, America, Lazarus, lettuce. And the slaves were evaluated, I think, started being evaluated in 1863. Well, we know what was happening. So here I am. My bias is the lyric, okay? Digression. I want to read this for you, Frank Statio. It's set in Boston, New York. And, you know, after a big snow, you can snow ski over the crabapple trees.
I've been to Boston, New York after the snow, and that's just what we did. So go ahead.
This is called Winter Woods, and it's for Linda Marho, Linda Terry Marnie Hopi. And I'm married to Linda. And here we go. Snow reaches rotted apples still on stem in the valley. Wind laughs like a giant breathing from a cavern. Firs hold snow shapes, white gingerbread men and crabapple trees, foxes and geese lost from all but their tracks, and glances from leaves penduluming the air. Those are the kinds of little things I love.
Can I tell you I love penduluming? What a beautiful word. That you
made up. And one question I always have is the things I write about possums, and my father had 35 dogs and so on. Can someone in Beijing or Seattle appreciate? See, you can hear the music in penduluming.
Yes.
Or, for example, a friend told me, said, well, Shelby, I've written pack house poems about bundling tobacco the old way and going to the warehouse and that smell in the warehouse. You can almost cut it with a knife, right? Right here where we're talking. And he said, I might not know what a pack house is, but I can appreciate the music. So,
when did you get – you talked about growing up on the farm and you were struggling to describe your sense of aversion, I think. I'm gathering from that you had an aversion to poetry. There was something that was not acceptable about it, and then you became a poet. When did that happen?
There were no books in the house.
What was it?
What was it? It was something inside. I didn't choose it. It chose me.
Mm-hmm.
I never had a writing class. I kept a diary from 1965 on, and it turned into – I wrote Imitations, and it turned into – first poem I ever – and I fell in love with little magazines, by the way, journals at the University of Wisconsin. Guy named Felix Pollack curated the largest magazine collection in the world. And I would go in and I would see these, and I published hundreds of poems in these magazines.
Well, you just read one of your poems. It's lovely. I see you brought a guitar.
Yeah.
Well?
Okay. I remember the day.
What's he going to do with that?
Hank Williams died, I guess, either 31st of December or January 1. And this may be a poem, just one stanza or verse of, I'm so lonesome I could cry. Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. That midnight train is whining low. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
Yeah, we have.
And he was dead at 29.
Hank Williams' song, sung by Shelby Stevenson, our poet laureate-elect in the state of North Carolina. You respect Hank Williams. Is he somebody who has guided your... I mean, is he an inspiration to you as a poet?
Oh, definitely. Very definitely. Yes, absolutely. I know probably, you know, You Win Again is a wonderful, wonderful song. He wrote those things out of his life, and you can listen to him and smell and hear the pain. Another songwriter I came to is Don Gibson.
Hmm.
I Can't Stop Loving You, which Ray Charles recorded, and so on. And I learned songs Gibson wrote from a tribute Roy Orbison did. But the songs, yes, just to hear. I actually don't know if I even have anything to say, to tell you the truth.
Well, you know, the poetry obviously began as a kind of a lyrical a memory tool. It was mostly song. The Psalms are songs. They were more or less meant to be sung. In a very different tone. Now, of course, it's a literary form. They're published in books. Is there a difference between a literary poem and a lyric poem, a poem that's designed just for the ear? Does every poem have a responsibility to be good on the ears?
I don't know. Everyone is the same and everyone is different.
Mm.
I love Yeats. Never been over there where he grew up.
Can you read another poem for us? Would you do that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, a small one. I'll read one to my father. My mother and father were married for 58 years. And by the way, he would... I grew up hearing things like he would say, talking about the old people, and his idea of life was to stop the hog hole and go fishing. I think I can say this on the state of things. Someone asked him what his teacher said. The teacher asked me one day what an adverb is, and I thought to myself it could be the white part of a chicken manure for all I knew. Which is a pretty good definition. This is a little tiny lyric for my father. Father who lies among the lilies. Father who lies among the lilies. I have wandered 500 miles, dodging trees that remind me of you, outrunning fices and foxhounds, the farthest wild woodscapes, adrift in tails curling tall from your cigar.
Father Who Lies Among the Lilies, a poem by Shelby Stevenson, North Carolina's poet laureate, who will be installed early next month. So I have to ask you about this because there is some controversy surrounding this. You know that you succeed Valerie Machen, whose very short tenure as poet laureate was surrounded in controversy. There was a lot of, in the literary world, some concern about her as poet laureate. What's your take on all of this, and now that you're succeeding her?
Well, I hope to I've not met Valerie Machen. I hope to see her. She is a member of the NC Poetry Society. We're having a meet in March at the James Boyd House, Weymouth Center. And my approach to waking up in the morning and going on is to appreciate creativeness. And if she'll write a line, I'll write the second line, and we'll just carry on. That's my view, because poetry, whatever it is, lives inside each of us, and we're all in this together, is the way I see it.
Do you have a plan for promoting poetry in North Carolina?
Well, basically to do what I've been doing and to do more of it, because I love words. I love music. When Rose says, I said, Rose, how did you grow up? She says, well, my aunt raised me. Both my parents died very almost together of the pneumonia epidemic in the 30s. And she said, my aunt said, as a baby, I was ugly as a mog owl. I kept thinking, what is a mog owl? So I Googled it.
There you go.
And anyway.
And seconds later, it was there. And now it will be in microseconds. Rose is your wife. Is that
No. Rose is a resident at the Carolina House. My wife is Linda, whose nickname is Nin.
Got it. Shelby, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Frank.
Shelby Stevenson has been selected as North Carolina's newest poet laureate, going to be officially installed Monday, February 2nd at 5:30. And you can find out more information about that and anything we've spoken of at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Jess Clark is our intern. Brent Wolfe is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.